Greetings, Z-Pack. Tis your boy, Z-Dog MD, and his homeboy, Tad. Tad is Z-Dog's only friend right now because Logan and Tom are taking the day off because I gave them the day off. Actually, I said, you know what? Maybe we should use the weekend to recharge. My idea of recharging is doing a show for no reason, except to talk about recharging, which I think is very important when we work in healthcare and we're constantly struggling with the mind going and our environment being like and us wanting to go right? And for people who are listening on the podcast right now, I just stabbed my eye with a Z-Dog pen. A Z-Dog pen that has a typo in it that it's backwards on this, but it says slighty funnier than placebo, which I think is slightly funnier than placebo in itself. How did I make this error? Too many stimuli at once and the inability to actually pay appropriate attention to what I was doing. And that's what today's broadcast is about. It's about being, I hate this word so much, mindful. What does that even mean? How can it help us in healthcare? And I hate the word because it's attained this like corporate performance bullshit administrator speak sort of vibe about it. Like, oh my God, if doctors and nurses and physical therapists and respiratory therapists would just be more mindful, if they could, you know, take a mindfulness class, then they wouldn't be so burned out. That's what some administrators and leaders are trying to foist on us. But Tad will have none of it. Do you know why? Because if we were actually mindful in the true definition of the word, the first thing we would realize is, we have to overthrow this motherfucking system entirely, entirely, because it is serving no one but systematic entrenched interests of big legacy players. It's not even serving them well. Even health insurance companies now are looking at this going, why are we burning out our caregivers and still not providing really good care for our patients? Why are we obsessed with metrics that don't actually measure quality? Maybe there's a better way to do it. So today what I want to talk about, and I'm going to load up your comments here, is, and it's funny, you can hear through this wall. Okay, so speaking of, you know, losing my ish, we have this is a huge building that we're in. We rented one spot next to the only other office that has people working in it on a Sunday evening. And that's the college test prep class. So the dude who runs that thing has come over here multiple times or banged on the wall because whenever I do the show and Tom is here, Tom is like, fucking shit, good penis, blah, at the top of his like 6'3" lungs. And so the wall itself is vibrating with Tom's voice and he's trying to teach about, you know, like the Krebs cycle over there. So he starts banging on the wall, which of course makes us want to, you know, kill him. Because we're doing a show. So how do you deal with that kind of stress? How do you look at a healthcare system like the mess that we're in and go, okay, what is it that we could understand about ourselves and how we interact with the environment that could actually help us make the entire system better, help our relationships with other people be less asshole-y and less reactive and more thoughtful? And how can we, to use the metaphor that we always use, get in touch with our elephant, which is our unconscious mind, and actually help recondition it and be aware of it so that our little guy who's riding on the elephant, our conscious mind, can actually have some control instead of just having the illusion of control. As it stands, he's just the press secretary for the unconscious mind. He's just a reactive agent who's like, yeah, I like chocolate. What if we could understand the nature of our mind, including our unconscious mind, recondition it and have a space where we're much more aware of what we're doing before we just react? That really is the definition of being mindful in the ancient sense of the word. So the reason I wanted to talk about it today is I started reading a book. Let me pull up your comments here. Here we go. This is how I do it. Got the little laptop. There's a little delay. It's just adorable. Hopefully the sound's okay. I spent like a good hour trying to fiddle with the mic. Wasn't working. So if I suddenly lose sound, you guys need to yell at me really, really fast. Karen Palmer says, ugh, the Krebs cycle. Dude, my boy Krebs had it on lock years ago, and now we all have to suffer for it. What do we got here? You go over, teach them in 5 minutes what they're paying to learn all day and be done with it, Deagle Wee. Shh. I don't think the dude watches the show, but I don't want to piss him off because then he'll just complain to the landlord and we'll all get evicted, in which case we'll probably just get a better studio. So, all right. I've told you guys that I myself dabble in mindfulness-type meditation, Vipassana, insight-type meditation. I've dabbled in it for about 5 years. Now, this is – everybody talks about this, and I think we're missing the fundamental truth of it because in the mass market sort of sales pitch of meditation and mindfulness, everyone's like, oh, my God, you learn to be more productive, and you won't take things too seriously, and you'll just crush it at work because you'll be such a powerhouse and your brain will be so big. Look, don't be an idiot, okay? Don't fall for that crap. This is what this is really about. And the book that I linked to, The Mind Illuminated, has I've only gotten a quarter of the way through the book, but it has transformed my practice of meditation so much that I was excited enough today after doing this for about 3 weeks that I wanted to come to you guys and tell you what I have learned from this book and see if it can help inform your understanding of what this practice is and whether it can help you. I think if everybody did this the way we go to the gym or try to go to the gym every single day, we would absolutely transform how we behave with ourselves, with each other, and I actually think that would ripple into systems change throughout healthcare. Part of the reason I was prompted to talk about this is that over the last few episodes, I've interviewed some people on the show that it just turns out when we get to talking, they're leaders in healthcare, transforming their enterprises respectively. Haley Fisher Wright, Robert Groves, you know, others. They, almost to a one, have some meditative practice. And we can spend hours talking with each other about the nature of the practice. So here's what this is about. The book, The Mind Illuminated, is written by a neuroscientist who also happens to be like a serious Buddhist meditator. Now, you don't have to be religious in any way to take the concepts of meditation and apply them, because what it really is, especially in the Buddhist construct that's talked about in the book, it's a science of the mind. It's a way of diligently practicing, observing the mind, reconditioning your unconscious mind, and actually changing everything about the nature of how you perceive the world, how you react to the world, and whether or not you suffer. You can't get rid of pain. You can't get rid of negative stimuli, but you can absolutely get rid of the suffering that is a response to that stuff. So how do you do that? All right, I've talked about meditation before. I've been doing it for about 5 years. Turns out, you know, I would sit down. I had a very irregular practice, 5 minutes here, 15 minutes there. The most I'd ever meditated was maybe half an hour at a pop. And what I would do is I would sit down and I'd play with, you know, focus on the breath for a little bit. And then I'd just focus on different body sensations and try to be present. And inevitably, my mind would drift and it would be this kind of experience. Now, sometimes I would have these very serene, sort of very transcendent experiences, and sometimes it would just be noise. I would just hear noise, and I would get frustrated, and there'd be a lot of self-blame, like, I can't meditate. And I hear you guys saying this already, like, I can't meditate. It doesn't work. My mind is too noisy. Exactly. That is the nature of the untrained mind. It is loud, it's obnoxious, it's like a radio station on scan. Every 5 seconds, it's scanning to a different station. And it's just like, blah, 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 hey, Huey Lewis here with, and then the next station, and the next station, and the next station. And none of it makes any sense, and the voice in your head is hypercritical, and it's generally an asshole. And it's very hard to focus. That is the nature of our untrained mind. It evolved over a long time to be this way, because the nature of the mind is to do a couple of things. One is, and we want to define these terms, they're defined in the book. The reason this book changed everything for me, by the way, the reason I put a link here, okay, you can go through Amazon and purchase it if you like, or just look at it, or borrow a friend's copy or whatever, or just listen to what I'm saying, is that the guy who wrote it is an advanced meditator, an adept meditator. And what he says is, look, a lot of people don't have the tools and the discipline and the teaching to actually do meditation right and develop a regular practice with somebody who's done it, who's been in your head, basically, who can describe to you exactly what's happening at each of the stages and come up with ways to overcome obstacles and actually advance your understanding of the mind. So that's what the book did, and I'll tell you what it did for me in a second. But in any event, the standard mind, the human mind, is really not one thing. There's no self there. Your self just attaches to different thoughts at any given time that are coming through your stream of consciousness. The mind is a bunch of different processes happening at once. There's the worrying mind. There's the regretting mind. There's the, you know, pleasure-seeking mind. There's the pleasure, there's the pain avoidance mind. All these different minds are competing for something that's limited, which is your conscious attention. So you have all these unconscious processes in the elephant trying to get your attention. And so what does attention do? It darts from thing to thing to thing. It may be captured for a little while, but then it goes to the next thing, and then it goes to the next thing, and then it goes to the next thing. An extreme example of this is something the Buddhists call monkey mind, where you're just like pop, 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 pop. You're thinking all, and your flight of consciousness all over the place, right? Another way that this can happen is something called the wandering mind, where you get along a path in your mind, you're thinking about stuff, and then it leads to the next set of associations, and you slowly start thinking about those things, and you get absorbed in work or things you need to do. Then you think, oh, that reminds me, I need to wrap and weatherproof the pipes at home, and then you get into that. And then something happens, a dog barks, and you're attracted to that, and there's a conditioned response that says, oh, I wish that dog would shut up. And you get this emotion, and emotion is just a physical feeling, right? So that's how the mind works. It's pure chaos. Now, how can you better work with the two types of awareness that you have to make your mind actually serve a bigger purpose, which is be more conscious about what you're paying attention to, be less reactive, come from less of a place of conditioned response and more of a place of mindfulness, which is being aware of stuff before you just react. I mean, that's a simple definition. There are more complex definitions of mindfulness, right? And so the idea then of meditation is that you, first of all, you observe the mind really, really carefully over many sessions in a way that is, the book gives you instructions of how to do this. You're literally watching the mind. The second thing is you understand the difference in the two types of awareness. The first type is attention. So attention, and again, I'm teaching this basically as a flight of consciousness myself because I'm going through it myself. So bear with me. If you don't like it, it's cool. If you like it, get out of it what you will. And when you do the practice, come back and listen again because you might be, you might come at it with a very different perspective. So the first type of attention is we'll call actual attention, and that's what they call it in the book. That is where your mind, your conscious awareness, is focused on something. So whether it's your breathing, whether it's the sound of my voice right now, whether it's a memory, a thought, an emotion, some kind of feeling, or a visual thing, or a sound, your attention can focus down the same way that in vision, your sort of macular area that it just focuses right in focus. That's where you're focused, okay? So that's attention. Now remember, you can really only focus down like that on one thing at a time. That's why this idea of multitasking, all the evidence shows that you're not really multitasking. Your attention is darting back and forth rapidly between two things, and that dilutes it. So what you're really doing is just moving attention like this, which can be very difficult to sustain and very difficult to make productive, all right? So that's attention. Now, the second aspect of the mind's consciousness is that what in the book they call awareness. So awareness is kind of like peripheral vision in a visual metaphor. So everything outside of what you're directly paying attention to. So you may be paying attention to Tad's incredibly firm buttocks, all right? I mean, again, no judgment. I'm just saying, these are tight. You might be paying very close attention to these, but in your peripheral awareness, you go, oh, that's interesting. There's a poo emoji, and there's a light, and there's Z-Dog's bald head, and there's an elephant behind me, and my kid is screaming, and Joe MCAT over there is still teaching. So that peripheral awareness is something that allows us to be more holistic, to see relationships, to get a bigger picture view. It doesn't drill down so specifically, but it allows us a more broad awareness of what's going on around us. Now, in our classic lives, our peripheral awareness, we'll just call it awareness, is very under hypertrophied. So it's kind of atrophied. We're not used to using it that much. Sometimes in a car, a lot of peripheral awareness allows our unconscious to drive the car while we're thinking about the music or thinking about work or whatever. Our attention is on something else. So awareness is on the road. Attention is on, shit, did I sign that note in Epic, right? So the thing is, what the book explains, and I think this is backed up by fMRI data, by looking at the brains of adept meditators, people who meditate regularly, serious meditators, have more neural connections than people who don't. You can actually grow your brain. Now, here's the amazing thing. The book uses this metaphor that you really only have so much conscious power. So the ability to be aware on any level, attention and awareness. And you're drawing from that same energy source. So if you're spending a lot of energy on this attention, you're focused on something like being in the zone, the peripheral awareness just floats away. So let's say someone at work, let's say you're a radiology tech, and the radiologist yells at you for protocoling a scan wrong and is being a dick. And you immediately get emotional because you know this radiologist is a dick and is just being a jerk, or the other way around, whatever it is, right? I'm just picking on this because my wife's a radiologist. She's not a jerk. And if she's watching, I love you, dear. Immediately what's gonna happen is your peripheral awareness is gonna contract. You're gonna be less aware of your surroundings, and you're gonna focus in on either the hurt or the perceived insult or the anger or that feeling in your chest where you're like, argh! And everything else is gonna fall apart. You're gonna become less mindful of the big picture, and you're gonna react from a place of your conditioned brain, which has years of experience reacting to insult. And you're gonna say something stupid or unproductive, or you're gonna back down and do nothing, which is also unproductive. So what the book purports is through meditation, and we'll talk about this in a second, you can actually increase the amount of conscious power that you have, literally by building connections, right? Through practice, through diligence, through exercising your brain like a muscle, and improving both introspective awareness, what your brain is doing, and extrospective awareness, what's going on in the world around you, so that you have enough power to be aware of your peripheral awareness while still being very focused and attentive. And that is the true definition of mindfulness, being able to sustain a big picture view while focusing attention without constricting your awareness and reacting from an unconscious place. It's increasing the power of your conscious decisions. So you're able to go, oh, wow, that's interesting. He's being a dick. He's been a dick before. Let me feel my own feelings here. Oh yeah, I'm responding to it in this way. That makes sense because I don't like this happening. And you know, here's maybe the bigger picture of what's going on. Okay, this is what I'm gonna say. And it comes from a very different place. So that's what meditation might get you on the simplest level. On the highest levels, you can understand the way your mind works and be able to direct your attention consciously, instead of having it be unconsciously wandering everywhere. You can increase the power of your overall awareness and mindfulness, and you can be a vastly better person with vastly less suffering, because instead of getting caught up in an emotion or a memory or a regret or a grasping desire, you're aware of what your mind is doing, and you can step back and actually react from a place of much more consciousness. So that's the why you would do this. And it's a scientific process that's gone through in this book. That's what's amazing about it, right? Even though it comes from a sort of a Buddhist place, it's a scientific, diligent process. Now, what transformed it for me, and I'm only 3 weeks into this book, I'm a quarter of the way through, but my meditation practice has absolutely transformed. Let me explain on a high level what he does in the book. And then you can kind of understand why it's important to actually put some work into this. It is so important that I want you to spend, when you're totally tuned in, an hour a day meditating. And I want it to be ideally, for most people, early in the morning, because that's when your energy's there. If you're at all a morning person, you have coffee, whatever, get up earlier, get up an hour earlier. I know I'm hating this, but go, you guys are hating this. Go to bed an hour earlier. Keep your total, Tyler Dixon, where's the couch now? All the couch people have come. Keep your total, I love these couch people. They will find a live feed, especially a douchey one like meditation, and they will talk about couches nonstop. So I'm really excited because my couch is super mindful, bro. And my couch is leather and it's so damn mindful. Anyways, get a good amount of sleep. Get up early. You're going to meditate for an hour a day, and I'm going to tell you why. This is how the book does this. First of all, it's a practice that goes through 10 stages. If stage 10 is you've mastered all human suffering and you are a mindful, adept meditator, stage 1 is you're just trying to decide when and how to meditate. So you're like, I'm going to set a time each day and I'm going to make the conscious intent that I'm going to do this. And what really was transformative to me in the book is this idea that setting an intention, so saying, you know what, I'm going to do this. And I'm going to do it for these reasons, because I want to be a better person. I want to be less of a dick. I want to improve my ability to focus my attention. And I want to understand my mind. And I want to wake up from this unconscious dream that I'm constantly walking through. And boy, I'll tell you, in healthcare, if we all woke up like that, this system would crumble into dust. And we would build one that is so much more compassionate, more connected, more productive, more effective, right? But that's another talk. So you set this conscious intention, and stage 1 of the meditative process is you just say, I'm going to do this every day. I'm going to start at 15 minutes. Get an app. I prefer Insight Timer. So it's called Insight Timer, and I think it's on Apple and Android. And it just sets a little bell, and it'll set it at when you start, boom, little Pavlov's response. You know you're in meditative mode, and then it ends, boom. And so as you start building your practice, you can ramp up the time. So now I'm up to an hour every morning. I get up at 5. I meditate from 5:15 to 5:45 after I've had a little coffee, because that wakes me up and keeps me alert. And I never would have thought I'd be able to meditate an hour a day. Because of the book, I'm at now stage 3-4 in his process. And it took me only a few weeks because I'd been meditating for 5 years. But if you haven't, it may take you months to get out of stage 1-2. That's fine. The rewards are, now when I meditate for an hour, oh my gosh, it's like the most incredible thing. You can see your ability to recognize distractions, to understand how your mind is throwing stuff at you, to be able to focus on the breath, and we'll talk about that too. So that being said, I might just go long on this one. I hope you guys don't mind. Let's read some comments real quick. Yeah, I'm here for the couch. Is it still for sale, Jason Rich? So Jason, within the couch, which is for sale, there's a book called The Mind Illuminated, which I want you to read so that you can meditate on why you would go to random Facebook feeds and talk about couches, because I think it will transform your life and your couch. Okay. Okay. That being said, what's this guy smoking? Jason Rich, a lot. A lot is what I'm smoking. Now, the first thing that the guy does in the book is he says, when you do your meditation, you actually go through this checklist. First, you go through, well, why am I even doing this? What's my motivation to do it? And that allows you to really engage, because you go, dude, I want to wake up. I want to be nice to people. I want to stop being a dick, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Cool. That will then set you in a place where you're like, I'm willing to sit down and I'm not going to give up. Then you have to be really diligent about it. You go, no, this is work. I'm actually growing neurons. Cool. Then you figure out, what are the distractions that are going to arise in my mind? Then you figure out, what are your expectations? Like, what's going to happen during this thing? And then you set your posture. The next step is you sit down and you go through the step of first being aware of your surroundings, then being aware of the feelings in your body, then being aware of your overall breathing, then focusing down on the breath right at your nose. Now, why this book finally convinced me. I love the angry faces too. Let's read some comments. Can I get your dealer's name, Stephen Carpenter? His name is Jose. And he sells me placebo methamphetamine. So it's just sugar that I smoke, and it makes me feel woke as fuck. And I think that's what separates me from some other so-called parody rapping physician Facebook Live meditators. Okay, let's take some more comments. I'm just here for the Civic, Jesse Kleffner. So I have a series of, I actually have a fleet of Civics that I'm selling. I'm only selling three of them because two of them are kind of blinged out, like pimped, that I keep for myself. Because, I mean, how can you not have two Civics that are blinged out? Is that a thing in cars, blinging out your car? Is that what Exhibit used to say? Would he bling your ride? So that all being said, the reason that they focus on the breath, and when you read the book, you'll go through this, is that people are like, why the hell are you paying attention to the breath? That's stupid. And I used to think the same thing. Here's the reason. First of all, it's always there. And what you're trying to do in early meditation is focus attention on one thing while still being aware of the bigger peripheral awareness. So it's that sort of mindfulness, trying to increase the overall energy of your conscious ability that you're working on. So the breath is great because it's always there. It's rhythmic. It varies enough that as you progress through the stages, you start focusing on different subtle aspects of the breath. Like, what's the pause between the in and the out breath? And, you know, I know my RTs are like, oh yeah, bro, this is like I to E ratios. And that's exactly right. And that's what you'll focus on. And it'll actually get you more engaged. Your attention, your mind will be more engaged. So the breath is actually a perfect object of meditation. Some people do mantras. Some people do, other stuff. This book really kind of focuses on the breath, not just the breath, but the sensations of the breath at the tip of the nose, because you can really pay attention to them. And the better you get, as your mind gets more powerful, you're able to focus on like individual atoms of air, it feels like, on the tip of your nose. And when you have a nose as big as mine, it's that much easier. Let's take some comments. It's hard to meditate when you're on call, Jerry Ray. It may be hard to meditate when you're on call, Jerry, but it's not hard to be mindful when you're on call. Once you get really good at it, you can apply what you've learned in meditation to your entire life. And that includes being on call. So when you get that call from the emergency department and you want to punch someone, you can recognize this desire to punch someone and actually slowly, slowly modify your behavior to realize, you know what? Everybody's doing the best they can. The emergency department guys are totally overwhelmed. It's not the patient's fault that they're a social admission. And you're just going to go ahead and do your best and admit them. Let's see. Oh, hey, there's less couch talk. What's going on here? Okay, anyway, so back to this idea of the breath. So in the first stages of meditation, you're just setting an intention to meditate every day. You're sitting there. You're doing your thing. You're watching your mind go batshit. You're trying to focus on the breath, and you're getting drawn away, and you're okay with that. Now, here was a part of this that just fucking blew my mind, and I'll tell you, I couldn't figure this out for years of meditating. The way he describes it is the unconscious mind, which is a series of different minds, really. That's the thing. Part of meditation is unifying the mind into one purpose. All these different parts are all competing for your attention, and they're all dicks. So what you want to do, they're unconscious and they're conditioned. You want to recondition them to do what you want, not what they want. And the you is the collective you of all the minds for a common purpose, which is to reduce suffering, improve connection and happiness. So the way that this works is when you're focusing on the breath and you get distracted, because it happens all the time, you'll think about your cat, or you'll think about this asshole at work, or you'll think about the couch that you're ready to sell, or that fleet of Civics. What are you going to do? You're going to bounce off. Then when you realize, right, oh crap, I'm supposed to be focusing on the breath. Back to the breath. I'm such a useless piece of shit. You negatively reinforce the idea that you are a piece of shit. And that is exactly the wrong thing. This is the way to recondition your mind. When you realize, oh, I forgot the breath. I'm supposed to go back to the breath. Don't just jump back to the breath and criticize yourself. Be like, I'm the shit. I figured it out. That's cool. That's cool. All right. I woke up and I remembered the breath. Awesome. I'm going to go back to the breath. The more you do that, and for me, it only took like less than a week, you start to condition your mind to go, yeah, we got to remember that we're supposed to be on the breath. And the unconscious mind starts just doing it. Now think about the ramifications of this. You've reconditioned your elephant so that instead of just doing whatever the fuck it wants, you are woke as fuck yourself. You can actually recondition it to do what you want, which is I want to focus on whatever object I'm focusing on, which means I need to recognize when I'm getting distracted, wake up and come back. And the more you do it, it starts to become automatic. So by stage two, you're just doing that. You're constantly coming back to the breath, getting woke, coming back, distracted, getting woke, coming back. By stage three of the meditative process, you're subtly paying attention to the breath, the in and the out, the gap between, the feeling on the nose, the periodicity of it. So like, does it change with any other emotions that you're feeling? Does it get rapid, shallow? When you get upset, do you get these big deep breaths, etc.? Do you feel tired and drowsy and sleepy? What does that feel like? How do you counter that? And the book goes through that. And then you keep coming back to the breath. Now by stage four, where I'm right on the border of that, you can sit for an hour, feel the breath, still be peripherally aware, get distracted and lost for a bit, and come back quickly and keep reinforcing, hey, that was awesome. I'm glad I came back. You know, good boy. Pat him on the head. And the next thing you know, the 30-minute bell has rung. Bong! Then you do more of that, and the next thing you know, the hour bell is rung. Bong! During that path, your mind gets so calm that you can ride your breath and just feel it in and out. And you can feel the power of your ability to do this get stronger. And it's like at some points you will get these blissful sensations where your entire body just feels like, ah! And that's part of what happens when the noise in your mind and your unconscious processes start to just calm down, and they all come to a common purpose, which is be aware around you and be attentive to the breath. And I'm only on stage four. I can't imagine what stage 10 is like. And the guy in the book says you can get through these stages. Some people, it takes years. Some people need to go on silent retreats. But some people can get through in a year. They could become an adept meditator. Could you imagine transforming your entire way of dealing with the world in a year for just an hour a day, like what you might do to exercise? So to me, this is so central, I think, to how we can improve ourselves. And the reason I like this book, again, is it gives people like us medical types, like science-y, you know, type A's, who need instructions, who need someone to go, okay, at this stage, what's going to happen is your mind's going to do this. And he has diagrams in there. This is what's happening. Here's a dog barking. Here's the breath. Here's what happens. Do you get that with you? And you realize, oh my God, that's exactly what's fucking going on. That's exactly what I get in my mind. And he tells you, this is how you do it. All right, let's read some comments. Because I bet we're back on couches and Hondas. Let's see. So Chris Champion's going to trade it for the Honda. Well, look, to me, Honda, Toyota, they're basically the same Japanese piece of shit. And I love them both. I had a Honda, I had an Acura, and I had a Toyota. And they're all dope, and I will sell them all to you for a song. It just seems like it takes a long time, Andrea Johnson. Andrea, so that was the concern when I started the book, is that it takes a long time. But listen, it takes a long time to lose weight. It takes a long time to learn to be a healthcare professional. That doesn't mean you don't do it. It means that once you start to recognize the benefits and you start to feel them, it's a self-reinforcing loop. Here, by the way, is the secret sauce. So this is what the book really was, another thing that really transformed my own practice. He's very much about the conditioned mind and how if we do it wrong, our conditioned mind will rebel. Doing it wrong means using negative stimulus, like, I'm bummed, I don't want to do this, this is so much work. Here's the right way to do it. When you meditate, focus on the things that feel good. Focus on the positive things and feel the joy of that. And that joy actually motivates your unconscious, because the unconscious is doing what the conscious is doing. It's constantly trying to alleviate your suffering and make you happier. And it doesn't know how to do that. So sometimes it causes suffering. So you can guide it by going, my gosh, this is amazing. I want to do this every day. And that little bit of guidance, that conscious intent, will make the time fly by. It won't feel like work, even though it is work. It's really hard work. You're building neuronal connections, all right? Comments. Thank you for being a medical type who's willing to highlight the benefits of meditation. Yoga is also a great path. It's known as moving meditation. Lun Lun Chua. Yeah, absolutely. There's a million ways to reach this path. The reason I'm telling you about this path is that I've tried a lot of things. For me, this seems to be the most effective sort of path that I've discovered so far. And that's why if you get a chance, check the book out. Now, you're going to be perplexed at first. You're going to be like, I don't get it. you got to do it. You actually have to do what he's saying and be diligent about it. Look, we're medical people. We can be diligent. We're good at it. We've delayed gratification. We've done a lot of stuff in our lives that was painful. This is actually a joyous process when you get into it. So highly recommend it. Anyways, I'm going to stop yapping about this right now because I think I'm going to overwhelm people with douchery. We'll talk more in the future. I figured it'd be a nice Sunday talk. Let's read some comments. Let's see. Hey, lady, is this the couch auction? Ty King, I haven't been called lady in at least a week. Yeah, it is. Going once, going twice. Sold to Ty King, who is Sofa King's brother-in-law. I ship you with Joe Rogan. I don't know what that means, Alexis Marshall, but I like it. It might be an autocorrect issue. If you're medical, you should be able to replace your hair, Ty King. No, actually, I'm medical, so I removed my hair surgically because that's what I wanted to do. Tommy James Abbott Young, thanks for speaking about meditation, etc. It helps get my head straight to get to the funeral industry, to get into the funeral industry after being burnt down from the medical field. I hear you, man. The struggle is real. But you can make your life better. I usually get very sleepy, says Cheryl Chambers. When I hit that point, I focus on the thought that I am tired. So Cheryl, he spends a lot of time in stage 3-4 talking about strong and subtle dullness, which is sleepiness. How you recognize it, how you can actually use it as an object of attention in itself. Like you said, focus on how you're sleepy. What is that feeling like? And how to actually overcome it. Here's a trick. The more you progress in meditation, the more calm your mind is. Our unconscious mind is conditioned that when the mind is calm, you go to sleep. So it's often a sign that you're succeeding. Also, don't meditate when you're already super tired. That's why I do it when I wake up and I've had coffee because I'm fired up and ready to do it. If I try to do it in the afternoon, my ass is falling asleep all the time. I'm like, I'm doing the Zen lurch where you just kind of go, oh, breath, breath. And you're basically focused on snoring and you need CPAP. Someone said the link doesn't work, in the description. I'm not sure that's true. If it doesn't work, I'll put another one up in the comments. Let me try it right now. I'm gonna click it. The link to the Amazon book. Yeah, link works fine. So that's what you should see, the mind illuminated. All right. On that note, I think we had no fun or lots of fun, but I'm mindful of the fact that I enjoyed it myself. Lots of people trying to buy couches. For those who are trying to buy couches, hit me up on the DMs, man. Slide into my DMs. For those who want the Honda Civic, that's a whole nother pile of DMs. Please don't slide into those DMs. I love you, Z-Pack. Z, what is the book? Karen Ostrovsky. It's called The Mind Illuminated, and the link is in the description for this video, and I will put it in the comments. I love you guys. Have a great Sunday. Oh, if you like what we do, we have a new approach on Patreon. You can donate one time and then just cancel after a month. So it's a monthly donation instead of every week. And we're really appreciative to people who support us on Patreon because it allows us to pay Tad, who's broke, and for me to buy more couches to then resell on the Facebook Live market. All right, Z-Pack, I love you. Peace.